Bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into the Bet the Board podcast, powered by betonline.ag. All things NFL Week 3, what we saw, what we liked, what we didn't, and of course, a preview of tonight's showdown between the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the Pittsburgh Steelers. But before we get there, I am, of course, am your fearless leader, Todd Furman, joined, as always, by my colleague and co-host, the one, the only Payne Insider.
No big words at the top of the show. I appreciate you.
You know, I didn't want to expand.
Boggling my brain.
Every now and again, I got to put you on skates first thing on a Monday morning. Have to make sure that you're applying the knowledge base and that you're in the right mindset for handicapping. But I didn't feel today was the time or place since we have a jam-packed show. Not only everything we saw, Dr. Chow joins us again to talk about some unfortunate injuries and what they mean going forward. But I guess at this point, Payne, a special thanks to all our listeners again who continue to put up record numbers, sharing the podcast, telling their friends about it, and hopefully buying the gear to go along with it to support the brand.
Yeah, everyone's been coming out in droves, so we really appreciate it. Obviously, we've been doing very well, but the numbers have been increasing as the years have gone on. So this is your podcast. We don't have a network pushing us. We don't have their user base. To use. So this is your podcast and you guys are responsible for this. So keep it coming. Tell a friend, tell a coworker, keep retweeting the podcast. It's greatly appreciated.
iTunes reviews. As always, we'll have a promotion
next
coming
week
up in the not so distant future. Free swag, 5-star reviews. I mean, like Payne said, we do it for you guys and appreciate all the love and feedback you guys have given us so far. But Payne, when we talk about love, obviously a very interesting week three. We saw some real surprises even by point spread perspectives. But as we do Monday mornings, let's start with the good so we can go into the week with a glass half full mentality. And I want to give you the floor in terms of where you want to start.
Let's go with my guy. Let's go with Adam Gase. 3-0 start, baby. Looking good. I heard they were only supposed to win 3 games all year, though. What happened?
There were some very interesting projections by some folks in the space who appeared to be, we'll put it this way, rather pessimistic about the Dolphins' outlook.
I think it's the enter button. Maybe you have to hit it like the 50,000th in one time, that extra time. You know, listen, Gase is a guy that just doesn't lack confidence, right? And it was interesting listening to his post-game presser. He showed some love to the greatest show on turf. He called the trick play there from Albert Wilson to Jakeem Grant straight thievery. And he said it was a play that he stole from Mike Martz in like a game that he saw in like 2001. And just listen, like he wanted an offense that wasn't going to be able to predetermine what they were doing. He didn't want like divas and guys like that to force feed them the ball. He wanted his offense to just have all these different parts that you couldn't really plan for. And so, you know, Jarvis Landry is a fine player. He probably couldn't outrun, you know, an elderly woman riding a motorized scooter with a dying battery. And this is where we're looking at right now with this team. It's the fastest receiving core in the NFL, and it's causing issues. When you have Kenny Stills, Albert Wilson, Jakeem Grant, those guys are all like 4-3, 4-4 guys. It is a nightmare for opposing defenses. And right now, the offense is humming. I don't know what it is, but I believe Ryan Tannehill, 1 loss in his last 11 starts. So he's starting to get going a little bit as well.
Oh, I'll go even further than that. Did a little digging and poking around, and thanks to some of the research team I work with at Fox. Not only is Tannehill Payne 10-1 his last 11 starts, if we go back to week 6, 2016, minimum of 300 pass attempts, completion percentage 70%, 3rd in the league, touchdown interception ratio 20 touchdowns, 7 picks, 6th in the league, his passer rating 105.4, 2nd. So for all those folks that were detractors and didn't believe in Tannehill as the face of the franchise, numbers don't lie, and he has been nothing short of outstanding.
Ooh, I like that. I wasn't sure that we would divulge all that, but yes, He's been very good.
I figure you got to share.
It continues.
Got to share a little
big game this week.
What'd you say?
Big game this week.
For sure. And they'll have their hands full with a pissed off Patriots team, a game that I know we'll cover in greater detail on Thursday and maybe even touch on later in the podcast when we talk about look ahead lines. But staying in the same vein of quarterbacks, I wanted to hit on two real quick. Carson Wentz in his return, 25 of 37, 255 yards. And I'm interested later in the show, Payne, to get Dr. Chow's take on what he saw from a medical perspective. But Baker Mayfield debut, 17 of 23, ended the Browns losing streak after 635 days. Hugh comes out and says what we all knew was going to just be a matter of formality. Baker Mayfield is the Browns starting quarterback going forward.
Hugh said you need to look at the film. You need to look at that tape.
I don't know what he needed to look at, because all he had to do was watch the game and see, wait, we finally won a game and we erased a double-digit halftime deficit.
And then after needing to look at the tape, he came out and said, I'll tell people next week. And then it leaked on Sunday and still didn't formally make it. He's gonna tell people today that Baker Mayfield's the guy. But Mayfield looked prepared. He has been in this position before. He's always had to earn his keep. The one thing that I notice is he is just confident throwing the ball. When it leaves his hands, he knows where it's going. When you look at Tyrod Taylor, he's not always confident throwing the ball. When it leaves his hand, it doesn't always look very confident in that decision. If you're a Jarvis Landry fantasy owner, I think you're going to be a beneficiary of Baker Mayfield, right? 15 targets. The one thing I do want to just caution a little bit, and I'm a Baker Mayfield guy, the Jets didn't really scheme for him. So when people are going to look at him on tape now and scheme specifically for him, it's not going to look as great, I wouldn't think. It's an extremely small sample size, but when you look at the passes thrown in this pass game to the center and to the right of field, Baker Mayfield was outstanding, 15 for 18. But when he had to read left, read his blind side, just 2 for 5. So something worth monitoring there. It could literally be nothing, but when defenses start scheming for him, and if that's something they pick up, it might not go as well, at least early on.
And it's a tough road trip against a desperate Raiders team coming up this weekend. Payne, I don't like to give you credit if I don't have to a lot of the time, because you're hard enough to deal with, or can be from time to time, but you do deserve a ton of credit for what we saw transpire as far as the Carolina Panthers game plan was concerned and their usage for Christian McCaffrey over the weekend.
I appreciate that. And if everyone loves the best bet. That's what everyone's coming here for. But if you kind of just take notes and listen to some of the things that we say, you're going to see these transpire throughout the course of the season, whether it was, the college football podcast saying, hey, Alabama's going to be an over team this year. It's a different dimension. We never gave out as a best bet, but you would have cashed, 3-4 overs now at this point. There's little things that, the Notre Dame situation. I think, if we had our choice, Ian Book would have been starting week one.
Correct.
Little things like this is, I think, what separates this podcast. And so when I said McCaffrey only had 18 carries through two games, that needed to be more. And we've touched on this ad nauseum about that Cincinnati defense. They're weak right now, stopping the run. They're without Vontaze Burfict. It makes that defense even worse against the run. And the interesting part was this offensive line for Carolina, decimated with some injuries, lost some guys in free agency. Right now, through 3 weeks, number one in adjusted line yards. So whatever's going on there, they're pushing the pile forward.
Yeah, and McCaffrey finishes the day, 28 carries, 184 yards. He did have two catches on his only two targets, so became more of a primary running threat. And one last thing on the good. We've talked about it until we're blue in the face, Payne, the Atlanta Falcons' inability to cover opposing running backs out of the backfield. And I think our listeners will laugh, because we go back and forth when some of these different markets get released and try and figure out where there's value one way or the other. And in regards to Alvin Kamara, we had a very difficult debate. We said, maybe the market has kind of caught up to his ability to put up crooked numbers, catching balls out of the backfield. Even we probably underestimated what he was capable of doing to put up those huge stats. And most importantly, they'll get us to the window with a best bet.
Yeah, not really something I want to go too far in depth on. I'm happy Kamara got us and all our loyal listeners to the window. I was hoping oddsmakers would have opened his receiving prop somewhere in the high 40s like they did McCaffrey a week ago. Instead, it was low to mid 60s. And, of course, didn't play any of his props, and he goes for 15 and 124. So a bit salty about that, despite New Orleans cashing for us all.
Yeah, 20 targets out of the backfield, and Drew Brees drinking from apparently the Tom Brady Fountain of Youth with another magical performance.
Did you see that spin move for the touchdown? Looking like Barry Sanders out there.
And did you hear his press conference after when he addressed the spin move?
I did not know.
He talked about, apparently Drew Brees coaches a flag football team. I think it's for his kids, and said the spin move is vastly underrated and the kids never bought into it. So he said he had to use that to prove to them how valuable a tool it can be in terms of, you know, carving out a little bit of space for yourself.
Very limber out there. So,
it was one of those things from the 5 yard line, much like a week before we watched Matt Ryan kind of helicopter, where you could have timed it with a sundial going, I hope there are no defenders in the area because we're going to need these 7 points.
Oh, Matt Ryan. Yeah, he flew over a couple defenders last week.
Big numbers for him in a losing effort. Definitely won't complain about that. The bad pain obviously comes along with the good. And when we talk about it, the 49ers, everybody's darling coming into the season. We talked about them being a little overvalued. Never in our wildest dreams imagined they'd be without their starting quarterback after only 3 games.
You know, it's a tough situation with him going down. You know, we'll get the full extent of that in a couple minutes with Dr. Chow. You know, you just can't spot Kansas City points when we're talking about this game specifically. Like, you have to match Kansas City early on so you can use your ground game as the game progresses. And so in that first quarter, you know, San Francisco has their second possession. I believe it was like first and 10 from the Kansas City 36. You can't come away with zero there. And right now, when we look at this league, that game is a perfect depiction about how passing correlates, I think, to wins more than running, right? You look at San Francisco, they were able to run the ball 2.5 more yards per rush attempt than KC, but they were outgained by a full yard in the pass game. And so, you know, we were on the Chiefs. This isn't going to be salty, you know, beat the market. You take 7, closes 5.5. And so it's annoying that you spot this team 35-7. Jimmy G goes down in the fourth quarter. I think, the late touchdown there to get us through the back door would have been nice. That was taken off the board for holding. That was a tough one. But when you look at this, the Kansas City defense is horrible, but they're basic. I mean, they're NFL guys, right? And they're turning, the offense is turning that their opposing offenses into like these one-dimensional attacks. So you can't just like fully expose Kansas City's defense for the fraud it is, because they're NFL guys, they're talented, and they're just seeing one-dimensional offenses. It's starting to drive me nuts a little bit.
Well, the thing with Kansas City, and you talked about early in the season how creative they were with an offensive mentality, I almost feel like their defense is adopting the same identity. Much like a college football team, it's boom or bust. Their goal is to go out there and try and create disruptive plays. They don't care if they let you dink and dunk. They just don't want to give up the home run. And they were successful building a lead. The Chiefs only mustered 3 points in the second half, and San Francisco just built themselves too big a hole to try and come back from.
Yeah, you're spot on, right? But even if you're a defense, right, and you're not a good defense, but it's 35-7, you're going to create some of those wild plays. You're going to create some turnovers, because every single time you can get up the field and pass rush, the corners know what they have to do, right? You're going to be able to squat on balls because you know pass is coming. And that's what's going on with this defense right now. You look at the metrics, they're terrible. But they're being bailed out because opposing offenses don't have the full complement because they're playing from behind.
It's going to be an interesting team to monitor, a game that we'll cover a week from today in greater detail when they go on the road for an interesting divisional matchup against the Denver Broncos in hostile territory. When we talk about other teams' pain, Andy Dalton, I mean, he was outstanding against the Ravens on a short week, gave it all back and then some against Carolina. 4 interceptions cost them the win, in my opinion, despite being plus 0.8 in net yards per play.
You know, you're not going to win games throwing 4 interceptions. I watched the game once in real time, and I think there was like a chicken wing hanging out of my mouth, so it wasn't like, you know, this concrete, like, this is what happened kind of thing. As soon as we're done recording this, I want to go back and watch that game. Look at the 4 picks, right? Like, one of them was a Hail Mary at the end. There was one that I saw was a clear miscommunication. The receiver literally, like, stops in his route. And the other two came on some deflection. So, you know, Dalton was pretty good. He was successful on 52% of his throws. That was 12% better than Cam. I just don't want to jump and throw them all on Dalton's lap right now. I just want to watch the all-22 there.
And he'll have a chance to get healthy potentially as early as this coming Sunday against the Atlanta Falcons defense that's extremely banged up. Oof. And we look at the defenses that were on display In that game against the Saints, 8 touchdown passes allowed, 750-plus passing yards between Matt Ryan and Drew Brees. They forced exactly 0 interceptions. And last but not least, playing a game I think that both of us are kicking ourselves for because we didn't grab the points. The Jaguars' complete letdown offensively coming on the heels of their big win against New England. Blake Bortles was, well, Blake Bortles, and the team averaged 4.1 yards per play.
I didn't watch the game.
You didn't miss a whole heck of a lot, I'm not going to lie.
Well, that was the plan going in, right? When you have the Blaine train versus the Jaguars off their Super Bowl win, it was always going to be a little ugly. Pure stupidity, not finding ourselves on the under there. But just kind of looking at the metrics, neither team won on first down. And so when you have Bortles and Gabbert and they're playing from behind the chains, it's probably not going to look consistently pretty. Mariota comes in, obviously. He's going to get credit for that win. They did get the ground game established a little bit, and Henry was vital on that last game-winning field goal drive. But, you know, I didn't see a ton out of the Titans despite winning.
And we covered the good, we've covered the bad, and the ugly pain. I had two what I thought were seemingly obvious culprits for this particular classification. And we can go with the Minnesota Vikings getting blown out as 17-point favorites, where they had 6 rushing attempts the entire game. We can go with Tom Brady and the New England offense, who didn't do much of anything on Sunday Night Football. But I wasn't sure if there was anything else that really caught your eye as far as ghastly performances from the weekend.
You know, let's go with the Vikings. And I would think this was going to take some time, right? Like, you're bringing in a new quarterback. It's a new system for the other players as well. So, you know, you have receivers that are trying to learn a new system and a new quarterback. You'll lose your offensive line coach right before the season starts, and you start to break each game down a little bit. They were outgained in the opener by San Francisco. I think they were fortunate to come away with a tie against Green Bay. But I think Sunday was kind of this two-pronged thing, and certainly there's an element of the Vikings learning some new things, the look ahead to Thursday night's game. But this is a Bills team that I think looked pretty energized. And, you know, it feels like the Vontae Davis situation kind of galvanized this team a bit. They hurt all week, right? The Bills are so bad.
Took the words right out of my mouth, by the way, but didn't mean to cut you off.
Yeah, you know, a player quit in the middle of a game, and like that's all they've heard. And so I kind of think that ignited the locker room a little bit here. Josh Allen did look pretty damn good as well. And I don't care how, you know, hyped up the Bills were for this game, the Vikings should have beat them even if they weren't really overly trying. So it was a combination of both. But I really think that the Vontae Davis situation played a role here.
Yeah, thoughts and prayers to anybody who used the Vikings this week in their survivor pool. But I digress completely on that particular topic. So from what we saw over the weekend, pain obviously has an impact on the numbers going forward. And as we go through and take a gander at some of the look-ahead adjustments, these numbers, of course, courtesy of the Westgate Superbook out here. And as we know, betonline.ag is one of the first shops in the entire industry to hang weekly NFL numbers for those folks who want to take full advantage. Thursday night, a marquee game, and one that I don't want to get too deep into now because there are some injury concerns, a bounce-back scenario for the Vikings, but arguably one of the worst trips you can possibly take in the NFL in a short week. Current line at betonline.ag has the Rams a 6.5-point favorite. We've already seen a little bit of over money come in as well. Look ahead number for this contest at -5. And you talk about it great length. 6 has become one of the secondary key numbers that every handicapper should be aware of.
Yeah, so a decent little move there. You know, I don't think any team is as good as they looked or as bad as they looked, obviously. So I would expect a little more fight from the Vikings. But I've kind of been waiting on this Rams offense to turn it up another level, right? They didn't play anybody in the preseason. So I think we're just going to see a much better Rams offense now moving forward. Took them a time to get going. The Rams defensive line versus the Vikings O-line is where this game's going to be interesting. And then obviously the question marks in the Rams secondary with Talib and Peters. Don't want to get too far into this. Certainly a game we'll discuss on Thursday.
No doubt about it. And I guess when we talk about the Vikings, we may as well discuss their divisional rival, who kind of laid an egg over the weekend, but not a complete surprise, as I know you and I both made cases for the Redskins being a live underdog there. But we've seen a major adjustment, albeit through non-key numbers, or at least for the most part, non-key numbers by NFL standards. The look-ahead number for the Packers playing host to the Buffalo Bills had Green Bay a 14.5-point chalk. Now, as I look at the numbers at betonline.ag, you see the Packers a 10-point favorite. Aaron Rodgers coming out of that game saying, you know what? I'm going to need to go home and have a scotch after our performance in the nation's capital.
It was ugly. Very good spot for Washington. I think it was more to do with that. Green Bay was in a tough spot. They'll get back home. Certainly this isn't a division game, but one they'll need. Now, are they going to go out there and cover this number? It's a pretty hefty number, right? And when you're dealing with Aaron Rodgers at this point, not 100%. If you do build this lead where it's 7 or 10 throughout, is there an emphasis on putting the foot on the gas and covering a number this big? Who knows? Now, probably not a game that I'm even considering at this point, though.
Yeah, I can't see it being a contest. There is some line value created there, but at the same time, as you mentioned, it's all about survive and advance, especially as it pertains to the face of the franchise, Aaron Rodgers. This next campaign all of a sudden takes on major ramifications in the AFC South race as the Houston Texans are taking on water faster than the Titanic. Current line on this game at betonline.ag has the Colts a 2.5-point favorite, number trending towards 3. Look ahead line actually had the road team listed as the favorite. The Houston Texans go, so they go from -2 to +2.5. All on the strength of the Colts' performances, maybe, or the weakness that we've seen from that Texans offensive line through the first 3 weeks.
Texans secondary is a mess. So I would think Frank Reich should have some options there. This is a big coaching mismatch. But I think for all the folks calling for Bill O'Brien's head, you kind of have to sit back and ask yourself at this point, with 13 games to go, what's the better option for this season? And I'm not sure there is one. So O'Brien may keep his job here for, you know, a few more weeks unless it gets absolutely glib. Anthony Costanzo, you're going to want to monitor that. Looked like he got a little bit closer to playing this week. That could be a big get back for the Colts. Not sure he does, but something you certainly want to monitor there. If the Texans offense is just a mess up front, they spent some money and retooled that offensive line. Doesn't look like it's a very good offensive line, the retooling. And then, you know, you have a quarterback in Watson that's really high and low right now. The highs are high, the lows are very low. Did turn it on late in that game, stacked up some numbers, but just, you know, another head-scratching interception there to Lamar Miller. Not sure what he saw, not sure what the hell he was thinking. So, I mean, he's got to clean it up.
I want to ask you about Watson, because last year, I mean, on the podcast, when he was putting up some of those numbers, you said, hold on, pump the brakes a little bit. There's regression coming. And while the numbers have looked good when you examine the stat sheet, from my untrained eye, I look at it and go, he's doing this when they're all in comeback mode. In the first half of these football games, he hasn't done anything, in my opinion, worth a damn through the first three games.
You know, he's still working his way back from the knee. So I think, you know, it's clear he's not 100%, you know, not fully confident. And again, you look at the numbers and you see like, oh, 8.6 yards per pass attempt this week against the Giants. But again, most of that, as you alluded to, in catch-up mode, just too many dumb decisions from Watson. He's got to clean it up both mentally and even physically. Like, some of the throws he's making aren't on target. They're late. They're forced. So he's got to figure it out a little bit here. And I know he's still learning. He's a young kid working his way back from injury. So I would think there's going to be some progression there for him, but just too many costly mistakes.
I will say, and give you your props for any of those folks that listened on early in the season. You said Will Fuller could be a value play from a fantasy perspective. Put up big numbers yesterday as he became Deshaun Watson's primary deep threat. I think he finished with 5 catches, over 100 yards, and of course a touchdown, while defenses are forced to pay more attention to DeAndre Hopkins underneath. And the Monday night campaign, and I feel like we're going to be talking about this team endlessly going forward. The Kansas City Chiefs, the look-ahead number had them as a 3-point road favorite against Denver. Number actually opened as high as 5 at betonline.ag. We've already seen money come in on the underdog, price trending towards 4, and it looks like it maybe even headed a little bit south from there.
Interesting game, and I think despite the little early movement there, when it's all said and done, the public will be all over the Chiefs, and we know Dave is going to need the Broncos like blood come Monday night. Serious issues with this Broncos defense, especially in the secondary. So that'll be an interesting matchup to monitor there. Denver, 26th in passing success rate defense. It's amazing. We thought that secondary was just so good. Guys got old, guys left town. Vance Joseph is a defensive guy, but specifically a secondary guy. So that doesn't shine a bright light on his capabilities as a head coach and as a defensive guy who really prides himself on the secondary.
Yeah, Vance better figure out that he's got a much more dynamic offense than we've seen over the last 2 weeks. A woeful 14 points against the Baltimore Ravens, and they did nothing of note in the second half. So we'll see if Denver can address some of those things that have plagued them on the offensive side of the ball. Payne, we've gone through the good, the bad, and the ugly. We've talked about some of the impact on look-ahead lines, but there's another key component when you're handicapping NFL football, that, of course, being injury updates.
Are you injured or are you hurt?
When injuries occur in the NFL, there's only one man to turn to.
If you hurt, you can still play. If you're injured, you can't.
Let's check in with 17-year NFL team doctor turned medical analyst, Dr. David Chow.
So are you hurt or are you injured?
This is Chow's Corner.
Time to welcome in our traditional Monday guest to break down everything that happened over the weekend from an injury perspective, Dr. David Chow. You can, of course, follow him on Twitter at ProFootballDoc. He's the former NFL head team doctor for 17 plus years, a practicing orthopedic surgeon, and you can get all his great information on the ProFootballDoc podcast. And Doc, it seems like we can't go through an NFL Sunday without an injury to a marquee superstar. And the 49ers were probably bit hardest by an injury bug this past weekend.
Yeah, unfortunately, by video, it's pretty clear that he tore his ACL. The confirmation, I'm sure, will come on Monday here. But they're already fearing it. He makes that last step, cutting back inbounds as opposed to running out of bounds. And you could see his knee give out. And this is before he gets crushed on the hit.
Dr. Chow, just a quick question. We know it's the ACL injury, but there's also some reports that maybe it was the MCL as well. Is that common to suffer damage to both at the same time? And if it is the MCL as well, does that extend Jimmy G's recovery timeline?
Great question. And the answer is they often go hand in hand. I actually would expect that there is a mild MCL component in addition to the ACL. But unlike Carson Wentz, when it's an ACL and LCL, the LCL needs a second surgery, obviously done at the same time, but a second procedure. The MCL does not need a second procedure, so it's kind of treated like a relatively isolated or just an ACL. His season's going to be over. His 2019 year should be fine, and I don't think the MCL, whatever degree that he has it, is going to inhibit him much, if any at all. And the reason why I'm so confident that it is an ACL besides the video is that in my almost two decades on the sidelines, we always knew before we left the field or the locker room, but still the report would always come, you know, awaiting MRI. And I think the 49ers are actually being honest here by Kyle Shanahan actually mentioning the words ACL. So they kind of already know.
So there's never been an instant where, like, you or colleagues said, hey, 10 minutes after the game in the locker room, it's an ACL, but a day later, the MRI revealed it wasn't?
I never experienced that. I mean, if you do a careful exam, you actually can tell. And believe it or not, it's easier to do the careful exam when it just happened than in the traditional situation of when you come into the doctor's office two days or a week later and it's all swollen and sore. So we were pretty lucky and paid meticulous attention to that. So I think there are very few surprises.
That's interesting. I just wanted to nip that in the bud because I'm sure there's some 49er fans kind of holding out hope that the MRI comes back clean.
That's what I would tell the player. I said, well, you know, you want to know what I think? I believe you tore your ACL. I don't think I'm wrong, but I hope I'm wrong. And let's hope that the MRI proves me wrong. But that was kind of a standard thing that I would say.
For sure. And when we look at another quarterback, Carson Wentz, he looked okay. Certainly some rust there, but medically, from what you saw, movement-wise, and how Doug Peterson used him, if you had to kind of assess a percentage, how healthy is Wentz right now?
Well, there's no question he's not 100%. Biologically, it's impossible to be 100%, 9 months after an ACL and LCL. But I thought he looked really good, and I thought the Eagles were really smart with his usage. And, what this goes to show is that Carson has done a great job in his rehab. If some of the listeners may have known, I started evaluating some of his pregame warm-up video before he was playing. And I've noticed a significant difference from the preseason or even the last couple of weeks. The last video, and I posted this on the week before, where before he was anointed, cleared and the starter again, I said, boy, he looks better now. And he was actually stepping in the throws and moving off his front foot. And I thought he looked pretty good in the game. As you mentioned, a little bit of rust, but that's everybody. That's without injury. You have a little bit of rust. But the key is, I think Carson is such a superior athlete. You know, 80% of Carson Wentz, 90% of Carson Wentz is better than most of the league. Certainly, he's more mobile than a lot of quarterbacks, from Phillip Rivers to Eli Manning. I mean, and a lot of others. And I thought the play calling was good. They didn't just leave him in the pocket and do nothing, because sometimes that's more dangerous. They moved the pocket around. They had a lot of misdirection, so people couldn't get good beats on him. And I thought they did pretty well. And I mean, I guess that's why the Eagles are the Super Bowl champions. They've got good coaches.
And the Eagles fans are certainly happy to hear that, I'm sure. A quarterback from the same game, Andrew Luck. Lots of dink and dunk, not really pushing the ball downfield, lacks some zip on some throws that I saw, and he had T.Y. Hilton wide open and just grossly kind of underthrew him. Medically, what are you seeing from Luck, and maybe big picture for this season? Is there a possibility of Luck's arm showing significant signs of fatigue later on?
Well, you know, he didn't throw for so long, right? And now he's throwing and throwing a lot. And I kind of subscribe to the never too high, never too low theory. And when everyone at the beginning of this preseason was still doubting Luck, I said, look, I've got some confidence that his shoulder will be okay. However, we can't know until he does it. And I'm not saying do it for 1 week. Does it for an extended period of time. So if you haven't thrown in a long time and now you're throwing and now you're taking hits and now you're throwing a lot, there's a lot of wear and tear and fatigue on that arm, in addition to the bumps and bruises that aren't even reported in what's going on. So hopefully that's what's catching up to him a little bit, and not a bigger picture item. So it's something that he could work through. Something to keep an eye on. Is it scheme that they're throwing underneath, or is there something with the arm strength going forward? The good news is, you know, 80% of your throws don't require max force as a quarterback. So accuracy still is the premium.
Interesting. And Frank Reich does come from that school of efficient short passing, so something we certainly need to monitor. The last quarterback I want to ask you about before we get to the defensive side of the ball, Marcus Mariota, didn't start, did come into the game a lot of short passes. What did you see there? And I think if you were the Titans team doctor, could you confidently tell Mike Vrabel, hey, Mariota's good enough to start in week four?
Well, if you're good enough to put on a uniform, you're good enough to start, right? And the week before, he was the dressed backup, and Gabbert was healthy, and so didn't come into the game. And this week early on, Gabbert head injury, concussion, and Mariota was forced into action. And he started off kind of horrifically, not much at all, but then he kind of did much better. I mean, he can... completed a string of passes later on, but everything definitely was dink and dunk. There was one, you know, maybe 15-20 yard pass that was very wobbly but on target and dropped. That might have helped his number some, but the bottom line is when your average yards per attempt is around 5, I went and looked this up just for reference. And of course, there are game-to-game differences in your yards per attempt and whatever. But, you know, you want to be up around 8 or 9, and around 5, that puts you at the bottom of career totals. Now, it was just one game. So, but the problem is Marcus Mariota still doesn't have 100% of his grip because of that ulnar nerve issue. And if you don't have grip on the football, you don't have accuracy. You don't throw tight spirals, and it's hard to throw into tight windows. When you look at his practice throws that have been made against air, there was a lot of time the receiver had to slow down, et cetera. I thought he did better than I would have expected to in the game. Heck, they got to win. That's the most important thing. But I don't think he's 100% yet. And really, who's going to start next week is going to depend on a on a decision if A, Gabbert's even available, or perhaps if Gabbert doesn't practice all week, does that automatically make Mariota the starter? But I'd be careful this next week, because now that they got a week of film on him, people can dissect where he is currently, and the next team they play might be able to scheme a little differently. I don't expect this to get better overnight.
Things definitely, as you mentioned, Dr. Chow, won't get easier when they take on the Philadelphia Eagles next weekend. But the marquee game of this week, and one that we'll cover here on the Bet the Board podcast in greater detail on Thursday, the Vikings travel out west to take on the Rams. But the Rams secondary, their strength of their team coming into the season, extremely banged up. Marcus Peters left the locker room with a walking boot on his right foot. Aqib Talib left with a walking boot on his left. From what you witnessed yesterday and knowing if they're in a walking boot, more precautionary, how should we be approaching this tandem of defensive backs for the Rams against the Vikings on Thursday night?
Well, the first thing I'm going to do is when the All-22 comes out, try and take a look at their injuries, because neither of their injuries were really caught on tape very well. They were kind of off screen. A boot on both of these guys isn't necessarily worrisome for Thursday if they're only seen in a boot leaving the game. We often put players in boots as precautions to calm down any swelling. But if they're continued to be seen in a boot at the next practice or next media availability, that would be of significant concern for Thursday. There's a lot of talk on Thursday saying, you know, it's bad for health. I don't know that it's bad for injury in game. The statistics have not shown that. But it certainly is bad for turnaround from Sunday to Thursday. And this is where they may be hit a little bit here with the short turnaround. So let's follow the situation. If they're still seen in a boot today, tomorrow, that's not going to bode well for Thursday. But the hope is neither one of those right now is seriously or long-term injured.
It's always a good thing as Rams remained or have become Super Bowl favorites given some of New England's struggles. And one last injury before we let you go, a defense that has already suffered a ton of losses to key contributors, had what appeared to be another yesterday in the form of the Atlanta Falcons. You see Ricardo Allen get hurt. Did you see anything on tape that should lead Falcons to believe, all right, he may not be back for any time in the near future?
Well, once again, because the way cameras cover the game, right, you focus on the quarterback and the pocket, what happens downfield often gets missed. So I did not see the actual injury itself of how and where he went down. But the way that he was being tended to, the way that he was being examined by medical staff, the way the circumstance of, you know, in a backpedal and coming out, there is worry for an Achilles injury. And if so, that would end the season. The other safety, Keanu Neal, tore his ACL. Deion Jones is out with a fractured foot. They've got a smattering of other injuries as well. So this could be devastating, and this probably would lead to a roster move. Maybe Eric Reed, who knows?
He's the best in the business for a reason, and you can hear him every Monday here on the Bet the Board podcast. Follow Dr. David Chow on Twitter, @ProFootballDoc. Dr. Chow, can't thank you enough for your time. Appreciate you putting all of this in perspective, and in some cases, hopefully being the harsh voice of reality for football fans everywhere, my friend.
Well, always a pleasure. Thank you.
Payne, I know we got Dr. Chow's opinion on some of the biggest injuries when it pertains to quarterback, and I think it's going to be very interesting to see how that situation unfolds in Southern California with their defensive backfield. What I did think was interesting was how they just used the boot as a precautionary measure, where I always thought, okay, you have to worry about this, but it definitely makes sense with the swelling. Two other defensive injuries that we didn't talk about there in regards to Mo Wilkerson and what that might mean to the Packers, and then Calais Campbell dealing with some lower body stuff as well in Jacksonville.
Yeah, I think the Calais Campbell thing is a little bit larger situation there. I know Wilkerson was a nice add to the fold there for Green Bay, but they haven't been able to stop the run thus far. Weren't again on Sunday. Adrian Peterson went wild, so not really sure what's going on the interior of that defense. But Wilkerson seemed to be, at least when they brought him in, was going to be a rotational guy. He was seeing some significant snaps, but they should have enough there. When you look at Calais Campbell, though, he feels like the unquestioned leader of that defense. And that would be a big loss on the interior. They move him around as well. He can really create pressure. And where you want to create pressure, we know the defensive ends get the money, and you know, they can get after the ball on the edge. But if you can create pressure right up the middle, it becomes an absolute task for opposing quarterbacks, and especially with his length, his height. If you can get your hands up and push your lineman into the quarterback, it becomes an absolute nightmare. That's partly, you know, not to go too far back, but we saw Drew Brees in week two against the Browns. He was seeing pressure from the interior. When you have a smaller quarterback, it becomes an absolute nightmare for smaller quarterbacks when they get pressure in their face. So Calais Campbell would be a massive loss for that Jags defense, especially we know the one weakness they do have is stopping the run a little bit as well.
And one thing, too, I knew we threw the Jags offense under the bus for their performance against the Titans. The defense had nothing to do with that 9-6 defeat. They held the Titans to 3.9 yards per play. So I have to tip my hat there to Doug Marone's stop unit for not having a letdown. They just didn't get the support that they needed from the other side of the ball. And last but not least, Payne, a couple other minor injuries to defensive backs. Richard Sherman, we know he's not quite the same player, looked to be limited for the 49ers. Trey Wayans for Minnesota. And then, of course, Patrick Robinson getting hurt for New Orleans as well. Anything to make of that trio of injuries, in your opinion?
Patrick Robinson was absolutely torched yesterday, but that I think that would be a tough injury to suffer there. Trey Wayans, I'm not big on him, wasn't big out of him on the draft. Not quite sure. I would never question Zimmer, but he's got no hips. He can't turn, so I don't know if that's a big loss. Richard Sherman, you know, we'll see what comes of that injury. Certainly the defensive side of the ball for the San Francisco is a mess right now. The secondary has not been great. So I think even with Sherman being a little bit limited, working his way back, that would still be a pretty significant injury to this 49ers secondary.
And on to the Monday Night Football game, where one team's season hangs in the balance. Down at Raymond James Stadium, it's the Steelers. 1-point underdogs at betonline.ag, Payne. Total on the game, 54. We look at the Bucs' hot start. And, you know, this is their best that we've seen from them over the last 8 years. Top-ranked offense looking for their first 3-0 start since 2005. But I guess the most important question when you look at this game, has the market caught up to Tampa's success quick enough? And this obviously reflects some of the Steelers' struggles amid their 0-1-1 start as well.
Interesting game, obviously, and we saw the opener. That's what's intriguing to me, right? So the opener itself was Pittsburgh -3 at some of the sharper shops. And so it wasn't too far off the look-ahead line, but it's been money that's kind of come in on Tampa, at least early in the week. Now, I'm not sure I completely agree with that, especially now at Tampa -1. There would seem to be, just from a value perspective, some value on Pittsburgh. Not a side I'm going to play. When you look at the total, though, I think that's a little bit more interesting. Open 50, obviously, some real professional support on the over. Where the total goes from here now, I'm not really sure. This could be about the peak at 54.5, just because we have that. There still is that old school thought where you're getting totals at 55 and there's one group that just blindly plays them under. And we saw it yesterday in the Chiefs game, that thing get out to 57, 56. And it's just, we're gonna pound this under because that's what we've done all our life. And so it sends it back down to 53.5, and the bet never has a chance. So it's very possible that this could get to 55 and we could see resistance.
You mean people shouldn't be using the rotary phones that they used 25 years ago because that's just the way business has always been conducted?
Probably not the most efficient thing to do now.
Tampa, as you mentioned, they lead the league in yards per play at 8. The Steelers 8th at 6.4, but the number 2 ranked offense overall. And to talk about the total, Payne, I wanted to dig into some of the Steelers' defensive numbers without Ryan Shazier. Not only are they 1-7 against the spread, during that 8-game stretch, 29 points per game allowed, tied for last in the league, 361 yards per game, 24th, 5.8 yards per play against 28th. And they can't stop the run, surrendering 146 yards per game. So I ask you about Tampa's offense and what you've seen through 2 weeks. Is that sustainable going forward, or have we seen Ryan Fitzpatrick at his absolute best, meaning regression is inevitable?
Yeah, I mean, listen, it's a nice story. It's great. He's red hot right now. He could certainly have success tonight. But when you look at this, there's only one direction, and it's down. You just look at some of these metrics. It's 60% of Tampa's passes are grading successful. That's number 2 in the NFL. It's only behind the Saints and Drew Brees. They're number 1 in explosive passes. So you're getting not just the consistency and efficiency, but you're getting this, you know, the explosive plays. You're getting them to take the lid off the defense. I don't know what we're going to see from Fitzpatrick. I would think there's going to be ample opportunity here, but he's done everything well. And again, some of these numbers aren't sustainable. You're looking at what he's doing under pressure, 153 passer rating. So even when opponents are getting to him, he's still delivering it. And I think what's interesting about this is it's a one-dimensional offense, and that's why I don't think this can continue, right? You're looking 31st in adjusted line yards, dead last in rushing per yards attempt. So it's just like, I don't think the Buccaneers can sustain this just being a pass-first team. Could be wrong. Fitzpatrick has been great. Todd Monken, we gave him praise, you know, a week and a half, 2 weeks ago. He's been even more impressive. And then you start to look at some of, you know, who they're doing these numbers against, and it's a Saints defense that appears to have some issues. I don't know what happened there, but that defense is abysmal right now. And then Philly's secondary, that continues to be the weak link on the defense. So the Buccaneers haven't faced, to this point, the most stout defenses.
And you mentioned the secondary, Joe Hayden expected back for the Steelers, and they've come out and said that they want to simplify the game plan, allowing players to play fast. And when you look at some of the quotes, we know the Steelers feel like a franchise in disarray, that Mike Tomlin hasn't always been able to wrangle in some of his outspoken players. But Cam Hayward, we want to get that rotten taste out of our mouths and just get back to playing football. It's a great opportunity against a good offense. And then Bud Dupree, we've got a lot of stuff to prove. There's a lot of speculation on us not being a good defense, but we know in our heart and soul that we have one of the best defenses. Somewhere along the way, you are what the numbers say you are, and it's put up or shut up time. But do the Steelers have the players, in your opinion, to make life difficult on Tampa offensively?
Not sure. I wouldn't think so. Now, you know, the Tampa offensive line isn't great. So if this is going to be the spot to cause some noise here, you would think this is it. They're just so weak in the middle. They can't figure out the cornerback issues. Obviously, Joe Hayden hasn't been completely healthy. But the other side, is it going to be Artie Burns? Who knows? He needs to step up. He's been a disappointment so far. But there's just schematically some issues here. And I think that's the biggest thing. You paid a lot of guys in the defensive line, and they haven't fulfilled those salaries quite yet. But for me, you just look at guys, they're constantly out of position. So I don't care how talented you are, if you're not being coached up, if you're not in position to succeed, the numbers aren't going to look great. And I can't see them improving all that much tonight. There's a reason why this game is getting steamed over, and it's because both defenses are certainly weak and both offenses have a ton of advantages. And that's primarily the Steelers' defense. Like, you just need one, right? That's the whole thing with these totals. You need one team to get out and the other team to play catch up. And I think there's ample opportunity for both of these teams to potentially get out early.
And when we look at the Steelers' offense, Payne, obviously Juju Smith-Schuster has really come on as an excellent complement aside from Antonio Brown. He's tied for the team lead with 18 receptions and his 240 yards receiving ranks fifth in the league. The Steelers, they've clearly been done in by penalties, no different than what we would have talked about the same time last year. 24 penalties, an NFL high, for 206 yards for 2 weeks. Last year, during the same stretch, they were called for 23 penalties. What does this Steelers offense need to do to try and at least alleviate some of the pressure on the defense? And will they have matchups capable of being exploited when you talk about Big Ben, Antonio Brown, Juju Smith-Schuster, and of course, James Conner coming out of the backfield?
Yeah, I think the last name you mentioned is interesting. I think they just need to get him going. And so, I mean, Conner has been dynamic catching the football. You look at some of his catch rates, like 91%. He's averaging 10.5 yards per catch. But he got slowed down a bit on the ground last week. And I just think there's going to be opportunity here. You look at Tampa's defense. They've allowed 59% of runs to great successful. Some worries there along the offensive line with the Steelers. The entire right side is doubtful this evening. So you have your right guard, David DeCastro. He's dealing with a hand injury. You have right tackle Marcus Gilbert has a hamstring issue. But I think this should be a balanced attack. Big Ben, certainly going to need to make some plays. He needs to be more consistent. He has not been good through two games. I know the Browns game and weather suppressed some of his offensive output, but like he missed a ton of opportunities against Kansas City last week. You look at his passer rating, it's 83 with a clean pocket. And again, I'm not a huge passer rating guy, but when the O-line's doing their job and keeping you clean, you have to deliver the ball. I think he should have some opportunities tonight against the Buccaneers secondary, and they're bad. Through two games, Tampa's allowed 9 explosive passes, 53% of passes to great successful. that secondary is beat up right now. Two starters are going to be out. Brent Grimes did go through a full practice on Thursday, but he's 35 years old dealing with a groin injury. So if he's not 100%, he might not be able to help as much as people think.
Hey, trust me. I know how hard it is to even podcast at that age with a groin injury. So if he's got to get out there and cover those receivers, I can't imagine it's going to be a high level of success for him.
I think our ratings are probably going to go down the more you talk about your groin region on this podcast.
Hey, you never know. We may have some friends of the program out there who want to discuss it in greater detail, but unfortunately for them, that's not an avenue that we're about to head down anytime soon. Did want to ask you last but not least about the other injuries for the Bucs. Are we ever going to see Vita Vea out there, or should we just write off this season as a lost cause for the disruptive defensive lineman out of Washington?
He's working his way back. I would think maybe in the next 2 weeks or so, but he's going to miss tonight. And you have another defensive tackle out as well. So they're thin, Tampa is, on the interior of that defense. So I could see the offensive line making some headway there, getting the ground game going. I do think you need James Conner just a little bit more in the ground game. Last week, really didn't get a chance. Again, as we've talked about, Kansas City got out to this big lead and made their opposing offense one-dimensional. But I think you need to get Connor going, not just in the pass game, although he's been extremely efficient catching the ball.
A game that looks like it should be fun with plenty of fireworks if the total lives up to its advanced billing tonight on Monday Night Football. Payne, before we close up shop, I always have to ask you, and I think I might know the way you're trending, an investment worth making in Bucs Steelers, or is this a game you just kind of want to sit back, watch, and see if it sets up any situational spots for us going forward?
Yeah, right now I don't have a cent on this game, and I probably won't. Certainly want to monitor this total, see if there's a difference of opinion and it comes down a little bit. And I know it's moved a ton, but there was a pretty sharp group still going over this number at 53 even. So do want to monitor that, but nothing for me right now.
Man, it brings a tear to my eye to even have you think about going over a total in an NFL game in prime time. Oh, how the times have changed.
Oh, It's tough to do. It's just so not me, but you either adapt or die, and I don't want to go the way of the dinosaur. So
that's a good point. I don't think any of our listeners want you to go that way either, not after a white-hot start in the National Football League, 3-0 with best bets on this fine podcast. And for those college football fans scoring at home, 4-0 there, so we can only hope that this torrid start continues and we're able to take it to the bookmakers both far and wide. Before we close up shop, I want to give you the floor if there's any final parting shots or tidbits that you'd like to share. If not, you get a 48-hour break from me before we come back and preview College Football Week 5 on Wednesday morning.
A couple things. One, we will have the iTunes contest winner again roll out probably Thursday. I told you we'd be doing this every couple weeks. So if you just want to enter in to potentially win a Bet the Board swag pack, which is a Visa gift card and some Bet the Board gear, get over to iTunes, leave that 5-star review and a nice little comment. You'll be automatically entered into this randomizer that picks a winner. So we'll announce that on Thursday. And again, we'll do that every couple weeks. We'll have the 200th episode contest on Twitter coming up here pretty soon. I believe it would be scheduled for Monday, the 15th of October. And then new swag, brand new t-shirts, first shipment likely to go out Tuesday. So if you get your orders in by tomorrow, 10 a.m. Eastern, the first batch of brand new Bet the Board logo tees will be shipping.
Yeah, and unlike Amazon, unfortunately, we don't have the bandwidth to be shipping things out, getting them to you 18 hours after you purchase. So Tuesday should be the shipping date. Make sure you go to the Bet the Board website, purchase your gear. You'll have it in time for the weekend because, as we know, when you're wearing Bet the Board gear and you're making football bets, you're 99% more likely to turn a profit than you would be without it. Special thanks to Dr. David Chow, who joined us again to break all things down from an injury perspective. It is a fascinating listen and plenty of great information that you get throughout the course of the NFL season. For Payne Insider, follow him on Twitter at Payne Insider. I am Todd Furman, and of course, follow the Bet the Board podcast on Twitter as well. Best of luck with all of your Monday Night Football investments should you choose to go to the window. We'll be right back with you Wednesday to talk all things college football, and of course, back with the NFL follow-up to break down the Week 4 card right here on the Bet the Board podcast, and hopefully we'll see you at the window.